Welcome to another PI World podcast. This is an audio-only version offered as another way to enjoy our great content. A full video version can be seen on piworld.co.uk, where you can find many more videos of interest to investors.
Good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us today and for your continuing interest in Ultra. Welcome to this virtual presentation of our first half 2020 results, where we'll talk you through our strong performance and continued progress. The formal presentation should take around 30 minutes, but we recognise that it's a busy day for aerospace and defence reporting, so we'll try to keep it succinct. Hopefully, we'll touch on most of the things that you'd like to know about. There will be a facilitated opportunity at the end of the presentation for questions, and you'll be able to ask either verbally by using the hand icon and unmuting when asked, or by typing the question into the chat function when Tamsin will ask it for you. But we'll remind you again of how it'll all work at the beginning of the Q&A session. Depending on the number of questions you have for us, we anticipate we'll be finished between 11:45 and 12. And a recorded version of this presentation and any subsequent Q&As, together with an interview with Joss and me, will be available on the group website sometime this afternoon. So let's start with why we think this is a half of strong performance from Ultra. Our people have shown great fortitude and agility in mitigating the impact of a pandemic on Ultra, whilst continuing to deliver for all of our stakeholders. As a result of their exceptional efforts, the order book was up 14% and organic revenue was up nearly 6%. And we saw good underlying profit improvement despite increased investment in internal research and development and transformation costs, all of which we take above the line. Cash generation and conversion was much better than anticipated. As a result, net debt was down significantly, even after adjusting for the delayed 2019 final dividend, and our already strong liquidity position improved further. And we have good momentum and excellent visibility going into the second half and indeed beyond. And as a result, we'll be paying both the final 2019 dividend as originally recommended in March and an increased interim 2020 dividend in line with our progressive dividend policy. And we've delivered all of this despite the impact of COVID on our people, our operations, and our stakeholders. This morning, we're going to cover three main areas to illustrate our good strategic and operational delivery. I'll start by taking us through our positive strategic progress with increased investment to enhance our strong technology base, which is already paying dividends with a number of new contract wins with long-term potential, our very strong order intake and order book development that we've delivered, and I'll also update you on our transformation progress. Joss will then talk through our robust delivery. And finally, I'll wrap up with a quick look at our major markets, what we're seeing in commercial aerospace, some positive further developments in our order book in July, and our excellent visibility, all of which supports our continuing enthusiasm for Ultra's exciting future. But before we get into that, I think it's really important to acknowledge that our strong performance through the pandemic has only been delivered through the exceptional efforts of our exceptional people. Clearly, our primary concern throughout has been their safety and the safety of the families and the communities in which they operate and work. And as critical suppliers, we've had to do this at the same time as continuing to deliver for all of our stakeholders. Our people have demonstrated great fortitude, agility, and inflexibility in adapting as we've had to rapidly evolve our delivery processes and changed our shop floor and office working practices to enable social distancing. In fact, despite historical underinvestment, which we're in the process of addressing, our IT team is just one of the many examples across Ultra during the pandemic of our values in action, as they put in place the infrastructure to support remote working of over 2,500 people, which is over half of our workforce over an intense 14-day period. Through their efforts and the efforts of all of our nearly 4,500 employees, we continue to deliver for all of our stakeholders. And actually, it's therefore been business as usual at Ultra, even in these unusual times. Indeed, as part of our management focus on operational performance, despite these COVID challenges, we've actually seen an improvement in many of our operational metrics, particularly productivity and quality and on-time delivery. And we've avoided any COVID-related job furloughing or job losses, and we see no need for exceptional government support, as you'll hear from Jos later. And importantly, our people weren't just working hard for us. There are a myriad of examples across Ultra of the great contributions our people are making to the communities that they work in or live in that have been badly impacted by COVID. And they've been committing their own time and money, which the group has enhanced to the tune of over $100,000. And they've supported broader government actions to address the impact of the pandemic. For example, extensive use of our 3D printing capacity for both personal and healthcare PPE usage, and also being part of the UK Ventilator Challenge. In short, we have great people who are continuing to deliver at many levels. So on to a bit more detail on the strategic progress we've made in the first half. We increased again our investment in technology and capability. Just as an aside, we've created a new senior technology leader position at the executive committee to coordinate and direct our technology investment and innovation efforts across the group. And I'm pleased to say that Andrew Perrier, currently Chief Technical Officer of our Intelligence and Comms SBU, will be taking up this role at the beginning of next year. In conjunction with his Chief Technology Officer colleagues in the other SBUs, he's already coordinating and overseeing our research and development efforts, which, despite COVID, was up 8% over the first half of last year. I did spend a bit more time on this at our preliminary results presentation, but here I'd just like to highlight some of the areas that we continue to invest in and where we've made good progress. Firstly, in Sonobuoys, where we have a number of ongoing efforts around Sonobuoy development, which is focused on enhancing passive, active, and bistatic capability, as well as investigations into size, weight, and power in support of alternative means of Sonobuoy deployment and control in the future. In advanced command, communications, intelligence, and comms networking, we continue to make good progress in developing Link 22 network managements, high assurance edge to cloud encryption, and scalable machine learning, particularly in adaptive radio mesh networks. We continue to develop our adaptive anomaly detection capability that has wide application across many of the systems and subsystems that we support. And we're working on modular visualization enhancement in support of real-time command and control functionality. And finally, we're also investing in advanced adaptive antennas and spiral enhancements, particularly for surface search radar applications. And hopefully this gives you a feel for our more group-wide, coordinated, and targeted approach to internal research and development that is creating enhanced future opportunity. And we're already beginning to see payback on some of that investment, particularly in the command, control, and intelligence space. In the first 6 months, we've won a number of contracts that are interesting and have significant long-term potential. And I'd particularly like to highlight the JICC contract that takes our command and control capability and expertise and expands it into the simulation space, initially working with the National Guard, but which potentially opens up a much larger multi-service opportunity. The Link 16 Alaska win extends our support of the US Air Force Alaska Command with a more secure digital jam-resistant network operating over Alaskan airspace, which has significant follow-on potential for our virtual C2I capability. And the MADIS win to develop an improved counter-air and UAV system for the US Marine Corps for those of you in the know, think mobile ADSI, which potentially opens up a much wider US Army mobile C2 opportunity. And I've just pulled out these three as a number of examples of how we're already generating opportunities from our IRAD dollars. And these have significant long-term potential for the group. But in addition to these wins that have interesting long-term potential, we also saw good order intake on existing platforms in the first half, all of which contributed to a 14% increase in the order book. The fiscal year 2020 annual Sonobuoy order, for example, under our five-year IDIQ, which was awarded to Arapsco, is worth more than $100 million to Ultra, which is up about 25% on 2019. The Mark 54 lightweight torpedo array order was somewhat bigger than anticipated at $45 million. And there's another two option years remaining on that contract. And we also saw increased commitment for our Orion radio. And importantly, not just from the US Army, but also from a wider range of the US forces. And finally, total orders for our ADSI C2 systems in the first half were over $30 million. And this highlights and reflects how robust our major markets have been despite the impact of COVID. And then last but not least on the strategic progress that we're making, our transformation is very much on track. As you know, this transformation is a broad-based and multi-year program to focus the group on what we're good at, improve underlying operating performance, and accelerate growth to deliver improved and exceptional outcomes for our stakeholders. The program is now split into six work streams, each of which is made up of individual initiatives at various stages of development and execution, each of which is owned by a team with central oversight being operated through our transformation steering group, which Joss chairs. Clockwise from the top, our major transformation achievements in the first half include very positive changes from our One Ultra culture. We're seeing greater behavioral alignment behind a common vision, mission, and values, much improved collaboration, particularly in the areas of technology, marketing, and process improvement. And our assessment and performance management, as well as our reward systems, are now all aligned to our new values and to our leadership needs. And we're just completing the design of a leadership training program for group-wide launch in Q4 to address identified organization development potential to better support strategic delivery. In procured spend, we've recently appointed a global head of procurement to drive both indirect and direct procurement initiatives. And we're consolidating and focusing our internal printed circuit board capability on rapid prototyping, high complexity, low volume, and security cleared assembly to optimize sourcing and to reduce supply chain risk. In site excellence, our property review is nearly complete. We're in the process of exiting from our first major site, and we're looking to maintain aspects of the recent changes in our working practices to further reduce our need for floor space in the future. In technology enablement, as you've heard earlier, we're continuing to invest in our IT infrastructure in support of collaboration and process standardization. And under operating model, we have now finalized the model we're seeking to implement, and we're completing the organization redesign and role definition, which, subject to consultation, we will launch in 2021. And we've identified individuals to fill most of the strategic business unit roles and most of the operating business unit leads. And finally, in operational and functional excellence, global data and process standardization, particularly in our HR and finance functions, is underway. And we are revising our ERP implementation strategy, as you'll hear from Joss a bit later, to better support the operating model we have concluded on. Although not material, these actions are already beginning to deliver some performance improvement, and probably earlier than we initially anticipated. And this, together with the agility and flexibility that our teams have demonstrated over the last 3 months, means that we'll be accelerating some of our transformation initiatives in the second half. And we're increasingly confident in the medium-term improvement opportunity that we expect Focus, Fix, Grow to deliver. So with that quick trot through what I think is good strategic progress for Ultra in the first half, I'm now going to hand over to Jos, who'll take you through the group's strong financial performance in more detail.
Thank you, Simon. This is now my second set of results at Ultra. The last 6 months have been busy for all of our employees. We've faced a major pandemic, yet have still delivered strong growth. On top of that, we've increased the pace of change. I'm increasingly excited about Ultra and its prospects. There's a lot we can do to improve the value we deliver to our customers and to improve the efficiency of our processes. And by transforming Ultra against a backdrop of supportive markets, we will free up resources to invest into our businesses, which have excellent potential to grow with good returns on capital. Turning to the financials, the order book increased substantially by 14% organically to £1.2 billion. Our book-to-bill ratio is now 1.25, up from 1.12 at the end of last year. Revenue growth was strong, up 5.8% organically. Sales were £413 million. Underlying operating profit of £53 million was 1.7% lower organically than the same period in 2019. But this year, we increased the weighting of bonus accruals booked in the first half to reflect the probable bonus outturn for the full year. This had the effect of increasing the first half bonus by £4.5 million when compared to the same period in 2019. Underlying operating profit would have shown organic growth of 6.6% without this change. On a full year basis, we expect a similar or slightly increased level of bonus accrual, depending on business performance. So there should be a tailwind of around £3 million in the second half when compared to the second half of 2019. Operating margin was down 1 percentage point, but after adjusting for the bonus change, was broadly flat year on year at around 14%. This underlying margin stability was a good result because we increased our OPEX investment in transformation by £2.7 million and increased expense company funded R&D by £2 million when compared to the first half of 2019. COVID-19 did cause some disruption, but outside of our commercial aerospace business, this was more than offset by lower indirect marketing and travel costs. We expect these costs to bounce back slightly in the second half. Underlying profit before tax increased by 3% to £47.9 million, helped by lower interest charges. Underlying EPS increased 4% to 54.7 pence per share, reflecting a lower underlying tax rate of 19%. Underlying operating cash conversion for the year was 98%. I'll discuss that in more detail later. Our return on capital increased by 17.5%, helped by improved working capital terms. This improvement is a good result, given a £25 million headwind this year due to the appreciation of our dollar-denominated assets. Moving to the revenue bridge. Translational currency provided a £6.2 million boost due to weaker sterling. This was partly offset by the impact of two small disposals and the larger airport systems disposal last year, all part of our continuing focus on our core businesses. Both our maritime and intelligence and communications businesses saw excellent organic growth of 8% and 11% respectively. Critical detection and control saw a slight decline in revenue, largely as a result of weak demand for sensors in our energy business. Turning to the profit bridge. Underlying operating profit was £53.4 million, an increase of 1% on the prior year. Both currency translation and the disposal of a loss-making business helped. As a reminder, on a translational basis, a 1 cent move in the dollar impacts revenue by around £4 million and trading profit by around £0.6 million. Underlying operating profit declined 1.7% organically, with the increased bonus accruals holding back profit growth. The maritime decline stands out on this chart. Maritime was the business most affected by the change to bonus accrual, incurring £3 million of the £4.5 million year-on-year increase, largely because it's our biggest division by profit. Without this, profit in maritime would have been flat year-on-year. The order book in maritime grew by 33% organically, giving us good confidence in future growth. The growth was primarily driven by the Sonobuoy and Mark 54 orders that Simon mentioned, strong acoustic and torpedo countermeasure orders, and an increase in development funding for the next generation surface search radar. Organic revenue increased 8% to £184 million during the first half, reflecting a strong demand for Sonobuoy receivers, signature management, and next generation surface search radar. Operating profit for the segment decreased organically by 10.2% to £27.3 million. This is primarily due to the increase in bonus accrual, the increased internal research and development, and increased transformation and restructuring costs. As a result, operating margins reduced to 14.8% in the first half. Excluding the increased bonus accrual, operating margins would have been around 16%. Looking forward into the second half, we expect strong revenues despite some COVID-related delays, with further orders on key programs. The order book in intelligence and communications remains strong, despite good revenue growth in the first half and some delays caused by COVID. The business won a number of new contracts in the half, including the strategically important US Marine Air Defense Integrated System and the Jet Trainer System, both of which build from existing software capability into exciting adjacent markets. Revenue increased organically by 11.1% to £114.1 million during the first half, reflecting increased US DoD radio equipment sales and sales of tactical data link and command and control systems. Operating profit increased organically by 15% to £12.3 million. Higher research and development and transformation costs were more than offset by strong performance in Orion Radio Systems, Specialist Radio Frequency, and ADSI, together with good cost control. Looking forwards, we see good revenue progression for INC for the full year, supported by the strong order book and a pipeline of excellent opportunities. The critical detection and control order book remained flat year on year, with strong order intake in our energy business towards the end of the first half, more than offsetting a weakening order book in commercial aerospace. The order book in our world-leading forensics business held up well, despite access to customers being hampered by COVID, and the strong aftermarket business demonstrating the resilience of this business. Our forensic business's strong relationship with the US Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives was further demonstrated by a $12 million order in the first half. Organic revenue for the segment decreased by 2%. Higher sales by the forensics business of both services and its integrated ballistic identification system, IBIS, and strong military aerospace sales were both offset by weak nuclear sensor sales and a weak commercial aerospace market. Underlying operating profit increased by 4.5% organically, mainly due to good cost control and a tailwind from transactional FX in our precision control systems business, both partly offset by an increased bonus accrual of £1 million. Underlying operating margins increased to 12%. Looking forwards, we expect further revenue decline in the second half, with the decline in commercial aerospace no longer offset by burning down order backlog on the military side. We do expect some recovery in sales in our energy business, but not enough to offset the decline caused by the weak commercial aerospace market. The number of adjusting items to profit before tax remains low, Statutory PBT decreased due to the mark-to-market loss on forward foreign exchange contracts as the pound weakened. Amortization on acquired intangibles is reducing as balances from historical acquisitions become fully amortized. Underlying operating cash of £52 million in the first half was excellent. As a reminder, this metric includes the principal payments of finance leases, which increased slightly. Working capital movements resulted in a £7.5 million cash inflow. Trade and other receivables as a percentage of sales fell, helped by some good work collecting overdues. Days payable for trade payables has been stable this year, which contrasts to the unwind of stretch payment terms seen in the first half of 2019. Overall, trade and other payables increased by over £20 million due to strong advance payments, reflecting the increased order book, together with deferred VAT of around £4 million. Days inventory have increased this year, reflecting anticipated second half revenue growth. Both capital expenditure and pension contributions were similar to the first half of 2019. We spent less CapEx than was originally planned due to a pivot in our ERP strategy, which I'll talk about later. Overall, underlying operating cash conversion was excellent at 98%. Free cash flow was £51.5 million, helped by the strong operating cash flow and lower interest and tax. Net debt was £176 million, but this is flattered by the postponed 2019 final dividend of £28 million. You will see from the yellow box on the bottom right of this chart that if the final 2019 dividend had been paid in the first half, net debt would now be £203 million compared to £277 million in June 2019, a reduction of £74 million. Net debt to EBITDA would have been 1.4 times in June 2020. And on a covenant basis, excluding pension debt and lease liabilities, net debt would have been £91 million, 0.67 times EBITDA. Our leverage ceiling is 3 times. We currently have £259 million of liquidity available and also have liquid cash resources across the group of £93 million. The left-hand side of this slide shows the transformation costs incurred this year. We incurred £3.4 million in transformation costs in the first half, up from £0.7 million in the same period last year. Our policy is to take these costs above the line, even if they're considered one-off. We also invested £4 million of capital expenditure. These investments included IT, operational expenditure, restructuring costs to align the organisation to our strategy, and CapEx on HR and finance-related process improvement. We have reviewed our ERP strategy and have decided that it is both faster and more cost-effective to focus on process improvement across our existing ERPs rather than a large-scale ERP rollout. Many of our ERPs are satisfactory, but the processes they run are both inconsistent and often inefficient. Going forwards, we will focus on investing in our processes and continually improving them, with less focus on big IT infrastructure spend. That said, we will need to replace or upgrade a few of our ERPs due to historical underinvestment. The chart on the right shows the transformation funnel that all of our initiatives move through. This is part of the transformation infrastructure that we are building and gives us transparency across the group on the pace of progress, ensures a common language, and from a finance perspective, brings financial control with financial cases required to pass gates and confirmation of benefits at each gate. This funnel is used for transformation initiatives at all levels of the organization and helps support the continuous improvement culture that we are driving. As you know, as a precautionary measure, the board decided to postpone payment of the 2019 final dividend of 39.2 pence per share. Given the strong first half performance, an additional interim dividend equivalent to the postponed full year 2019 dividend of 39.2 pence per share will be paid in September. A 2020 interim dividend of 15.4 pence will also be paid on the same date as the postponed 2019 dividend. This is an increase by 2.7% compared to the prior year, showing our confidence in the business, but also retaining a strong balance sheet. Given that this has been an unusual year so far, we're updating our previous guidance slightly. Despite the severe disruption in the commercial aerospace market, we're still confident that overall our strong growth will continue in the second half with broadly stable year-on-year margins. Transformation is accelerating fast, so we're still planning on transformation expenses within our original guidance range of £8 to £12 million. Our internal R&D spend will accelerate in the second half, but is expected to be around 4% due to COVID-related customer delays and resourcing constraints. We're still planning to exceed ROIC of 18%, despite headwinds caused by the appreciation of our dollar-denominated assets. Capital expenditure will be around £20 to £25 million in 2020, slightly lower than previous guidance, reflecting the previously mentioned change in the ERP strategy. Operating cash conversion is now expected to be above our previous 60 to 75% guidance, but will fall from the first half level because we intend to pay the deferred VAT ahead of the due date. Our through cycle medium-term cash conversion target remains 80 to 90%. I'll now hand back to Simon for the outlook and summary.
Thanks, Jos. So how does the rest of the year look? Well, as we enter the second half, our major markets are solid. And as we've discussed before, in broad terms, we see a lag in our major US defense market of between 12 and 18 months from defense budget agreement to actual ultra order intake. And so with our very strong order book and near-term US DOD budget clarity with the House and the Senate positions pretty close and a general desire to get the fiscal year 2021 budget signed off before the US election, we have excellent short-term and good medium-term visibility. In the longer term, whilst the evolving geopolitical situation and the pivot of Five Eye defence customers to address more near-peer threats rather than just counterinsurgence and terrorism threats is creating upward pressure on defence spend. But of course, economic costs of the pandemic are potentially creating affordability issues. And we should also not forget that the defence market is cyclical, and how these conflicting drivers will play out is unclear. And I've included on this slide an eye chart on the top left-hand quadrant, not to provide you with any guidance, but to help you understand that we're continuing to monitor a range of alternative defence spending scenarios based on prior defence cycles, particularly in the US. And we are reviewing and have reviewed our platforms that we're on against the capabilities that we have versus the spending areas that we know are being prioritised by our respective Five Eye defence customers. And with our strong technology base, which is particularly relevant, and our agility, we're pretty comfortable that Ultra is resilient in most defence spending environments. On the right-hand side of the chart, it does illustrate that not all our markets are performing as one, and we have seen significant demand-side shock in our commercial aerospace business, as Jos has alluded to, which is traditionally about 7% of group revenue. We expect about a 40% decline in 2020 in our commercial aerospace business. But in the first half, we were able to mitigate the impact of this demand shortfall by burning through backlog. But there will be less opportunity to do this in H2. So I think whilst Jos's guidance on continued growth is pretty clear, there is some risk from the commercial aerospace challenges we face. And the positive order book development we saw in H1 has continued into H2. We've already won two large orders, which were announced earlier this month. The £42 million first production order for 32 ship sets of the US Navy's Next Generation Surface Search Radar, which has a follow-on potential for another 150-plus ship sets. We've had a $33 million order for 125 sonar buoys, which is on top of our existing order on the five-year IDIQ. We've also received our first sole source sonar buoy development contract since we started bidding for sonar buoy development work outside of our joint venture with Spartan. And building on the Marine Corps order in the first half, we're also seeing positive order momentum for extended applications across a broader range of services, both in the US and overseas. And as a result, we have excellent full year visibility with order cover now close to 100%, although clearly we still have to deliver it. So I think we've made great progress in the first half. We do have a bit more revenue risk for commercial aerospace as we go into the second half. We do expect a bit more internal research and development. We do expect to see our transformation costs accelerate a bit, and our SG&A expense tailwind, all of which will be small headwinds into H2. But based on the organization's demonstrated agility, we think we have excellent visibility on good continued progress in H2. Importantly, I think our performance in the first half really demonstrates why we're so excited about this business. We've shown that we're an agile player in cyclical but stable defense and detection markets. We're accelerating target investment in our already strong technology base to enhance our sustainable competitive advantage, and we've already seen early wins suggesting that our growth aspirations are real. We have a robust business model with good visibility that gives us time to react effectively to evolving markets and evolving customer needs. And we're changing Ultra's culture and are increasingly comfortable that the transformation opportunity in this organization is significant. And we've demonstrated that this is a business that delivers strong through-cycle cash generation, and we're increasingly focusing on value creation, even in these challenging environments created by the pandemic. So all in all, that gives me comfort that 2020 will be a year of good progress for Ultra, as we originally anticipated. And it also gives me increasing confidence in our ability over the longer term to generate excellent outcomes for all of our stakeholders, all of which adds up to an exciting future. That's the end of the formal presentation. I'll now hand back to Tamsin, who will open it up for facilitated questions.
And Chris Leonard from Credit Suisse has a question. We're just unmuting you now, Chris. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, brilliant. Hi. If I could just ask on maybe two questions or potentially three, but firstly on the new sonar buoy development contract you secured for around $28 million. If you could maybe expand on what you guys are kind of seeing with the evolution of the market now that that is an independent contract outside of Arapsco, that could be helpful for us, please. And then secondly, looking at the radar surface search contract there, and I think somebody just alluded to the fact that currently you've got maybe 32 ship sets or so. There could be an additional 150 ship sets at absolute, you know, full scope. That seems like a pretty sizable opportunity. And I'm just wondering if I've got that wrong, but you know, if you extrapolate it, it maybe suggests maybe like $6 billion sitting there. I just wanted to check if I was being silly there. And then lastly, your recent appointment to the board of Ken in July, obviously within the US there. And I just wondered if you could give any color there on the decision to appoint him there to the board. And maybe is that from your side, hoping to garner some more sort of US defense connectivity from that border appointment or further insights? Those are the three, if you've got them. Thanks.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for raising those questions. I'll probably pick up most of them, then Jossel will jump in if I get the numbers wrong. Just on the EFAR, DIFAR, Sonar Buoy Development Award outside of Arapsco, that is the first contract we've taken, development contract that we have taken independently of the joint venture. It is, you know, it is, it does reflect the DOJ and the Navy's position that they wanted more competition in Sonobuoys, which is a growing marketplace for us. They are now getting that competition, but it is likely to lead to an unwind of the joint venture over time, but not until the end of the five-year IDIQ at the earliest. And we feel we're very well placed in that Sonobuoy market to gain more than our fair share. Don't forget that, you know, we only have 50% of that market today as a joint venture partner. On NGSSR, you're right, this is an exciting opportunity for us. This is something we've been looking at and investing in for some time. It's an accelerated program with the US Navy. We did the development work, we did the LRIP work. This is the first production order that we've received. And if we execute that effectively, you know, there is a strong desire for us to continue to support the Navy by entering into the remainder of the production contract for demand for that business. I think you said $6 billion or something in your question. I couldn't quite do those maths, but it's nothing like that, Chris. I mean, this is more like a $200 to $250 million potential, and it'll be over sort of five-ish or so years. So not the $6 billion that you'd hope for, but it's still a really significant contract for us. And then finally, the appointment of General Hunsaker to the board. Look, the end of the day, this is a group of businesses that's primary market is US defense. We felt for some time that it's important to get US representation on our main boards, not just our SSA and proxy boards, to provide the board with greater insight into what's going on in the US, and also to support the executive in further developing our position and opportunity in the US. And we're really lucky to get somebody like General Hunsaker on board, who brings with him a wealth of experience and great knowledge, both of the Army, the broader US Defense Services, and also the Hill, which, as you know, is an important influencer in US defense spend. So we're really lucky to have him. It's been great to have him on board for the last couple of months, and he's already providing us with insights and indeed challenge that we really need.
Brilliant. Thank you for all those. Sorry about the $6 billion.
No, good. I like the maths.
And we'll go to Hamish Delgano from Jefferies. We're just unmuting you now, Hamish. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hi there. Just at the Capital Markets Day, you said there was still strategy development to do on the other specialist businesses. Just wondering whether that's now been completed and whether you still believe these businesses fit within Ultra, or could we see some disposals in the near term? And then just secondly, the improved cash conversion guidance seems to be largely driven by the increased advance payments. Is this just a timing issue? I mean, had you previously expected these advance payments in 2021? If so, could we see the full year 21 cash conversion drop back down again? Thank you.
Thanks, Hamish. Thanks for your questions. I mean, Josh, do you want to take both strategy and the cash guidance?
Yes, certainly. We've done a lot of work this year on the strategy of both our energy and forensics business, which are in CD&C. I think it's fair to say that we're extremely excited about both, but particularly forensics. That is a very, very good business with a world-leading position. It's got a very interesting mix of sort of 55% service revenue and 45% sale of its IBIS system. So it's got a nice balance, which makes it resilient. It also has very good technology, which we think we can use to expand into adjacent markets. So we like that business a lot. It also has very helpful technology for the rest of the Ultra Group, because it's our sort of leading edge of the algorithms and artificial intelligence side, which we see as useful across other Ultra businesses. So we see that as a good business with good potential for growth. Energy is doing very well with NuScale on the small modular reactor. We'll see how that goes, but it's looking quite positive at the moment. And aerospace, has got some interesting technology. We are less developed on working through the strategy on that. We made quite good progress in the first half, but I'd say that's the one that we need to do a bit more on. But at this point, we're not planning to sell any businesses. We feel that we've got good opportunities for organic growth really everywhere, and we're focused on the organic story at the moment because we think that has the best return on capital for our investors.
And Hamish, I think you've heard us talk before that, you know, strategically we are focused on long-term sustainable value creation, and all of our businesses are strategic, but if they're worth something, if they're worth more to somebody else, clearly we have an obligation to monetize them and worry about what to do with the money afterwards. Just to repeat what Jos has said, whilst we own businesses, we'll continue to invest in them. We'll continue to drive operational efficiency and improvement in them. And we see good opportunity in all of our businesses at the moment to enhance the value by both investing in them strategically and driving them operationally.
And then, sorry, cash conversion, Amish. I mean, actually, the revenue growth is pretty well in line with what we thought, but that does mean that the mix is a bit different to what we thought, because we thought commercial aerospace would be good this year, and it's turned out to be terrible, which means that I&C and Maritimes had better revenue growth than we were expecting, and that's businesses that have more advances. I think in the second half, I do expect the cash conversion to drop a bit, but mostly because of the VAT, which we intend to pay to the governments where we can, because we don't really want to be taking, or we'd like to be supporting our governments where we can. We don't feel we need to defer VAT more than we have to. Kind of looking into next year, we do only earn the cash once, unfortunately, so I think next year the cash conversion will be lower than this year.
But still within that medium-term guidance that we provided to you in the past, Amish.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
And now we'll go to Rory Smith from Investec. We're just unmuting you now, Rory, and you will have to unmute yourself. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hi, Simon. Hi, Josh. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah, can hear you, Rory.
Great, thanks. Two questions for me. Just you know, given the strength of the order book and the growth there, if you'd be willing to put a number on order cover for next year, and secondly, just with the change in ERP strategy, if you could give a bit more color on that, maybe by business unit, if there was any sort of businesses where the ERP strategy or the ERP system is maybe sort of suboptimal that you've identified, maybe just a bit more on that. Thanks.
So thanks for that cheeky start. Look, we're not going to give you order cover for next year. What we can say is the order book is very good, and therefore order cover, as Jos alluded to, is very strong, probably stronger than it's been for a couple of years. We continue to see good demand in our existing markets and on the existing products that we supply into the platforms we're on. We continue to see further opportunities to realise and get into development contracts as a result of the IR&D dollars that we're spending. So I don't see any massive loss of order tailwind going into 2021, particularly given the stable nature and good visibility of the US defence market. So I'm waffling around, not giving you an answer, but saying things are still pretty good. ERP, Jos?
Yeah, so ERP, most of Ultra's actually on IFS or Deltek. Both of those are absolutely fine. They're fit for the future. They don't always run efficient processes, as I mentioned, so we'll focus on standardising the processes in an ERP-agnostic way and driving efficiencies that way. There are at least a couple of businesses where their ERPs are more burning platform, notably our radios business in Canada needs an upgrade, actually, probably not a new system, but certainly needs an upgrade. And our PMES business definitely needs a new ERP that is quite broken. But it's not a wholesale change.
I think to build on a bit of that, Rory, then, under the old ERP strategy, we were trying to standardize processes by using one ERP system and trying to install it everywhere. I think most people will tell you, particularly in an organization like Ultra that has such a historical plethora of businesses and non-standard processes, that's quite a big challenge. And frankly, in today's IT environment, it's not necessary to do a single global big ERP implementation to deliver the same benefits you get from standardizing and commonizing the underlying processes that it runs. But it doesn't mean that the money we've invested is wasted. Quite the opposite. We've got, as Jos has highlighted, good ERP systems in most places now, and we'll invest on a tactical basis as and when our sites need upgrades.
Thank you.
And now we'll go to Richard Page from Numis. Richard, you'll have to unmute yourself. Go ahead and ask your question.
Excellent, thank you. Morning all. Couple of questions from me. Just on the R&D investment, obviously a bit of a impediment in the first half in terms of raising the money, increasing the spend there. But can I just ask the extent to which the money or increased investments going towards accelerating existing projects versus what money is going into new projects and where that may be going? And then second question, number that sort of surprised me a bit in your report and accounts was the new metric you measured on on-time delivery at 76%. Just a bit more colour behind that, but also what we might expect and progress in this year, please.
Thanks, Richard. I'll let Jos deal with the on-time delivery point. But just on that R&D investment, there are a couple of things going on in our IR&D. Firstly, that we are investing in IR&D now as a group rather than as an aggregation of individual businesses. And so our IR&D is much more targeted. It is generally developing both new capability, building on existing stuff we do, and it's also taking existing stuff we do and adapting it to open up new applications of the work. A lot of the stuff we're working on at the moment is around command, control, intelligence. It's around data structuring, data analytics. It's around anomaly identification and visualization and all of those things. But we don't split it between new stuff and optimizing existing stuff. We generally don't try and invent an iPod. We're out there enhancing what we do and developing technologies and capabilities that we know our customers are going to need, if not today, certainly in 5 or 10 years' time. What about on-time delivery, Jos?
It's a good question, Richard. I might start with a general point and then I will answer your specific point. Simon and I are moving Ultra more towards measuring and managing the efficiency of our processes. They're effectively the input metrics to the financial outcomes that you guys are interested in. One of those metrics is OTIF, delivering on time to our customers. We believe is very important to making our customers happy. And if we have happy customers, then they want to come back to us and they recommend us. So that is also good for growth. So OTIF is one of a number of metrics that we now manage every single month across all of our businesses. And we are gradually moving the culture to focus much more on those process improvement metrics than a kind of make the month mentality. OTIF is 76%, clearly not where we want it to be. Our internal goals are a long way above that. We have both goals for this year and we already have goals for next year, actually. And we have 2024 goals, so we know how we're expecting OTIF to progress over that time. We're not satisfied with 76%, and the hotspots we are working on. And actually, we saw a very, very good presentation from one of our biggest sinners the other day on how they are getting through their overdues and getting back on top of their on-time delivery. So I think we're quite comfortable with the progress we're making on that front.
I mean, I think just to build on that a bit, Richard, you know, it is definitely true that in particularly the defence space, there has been a historical tolerance by the customer, particularly in earlier research type contracts, of more flexibility around contract deadlines than we think is appropriate. And JOS has brought much greater rigor to exercising effective operational oversight over our businesses. And we think that it's important to get our all our production measures and our output measures, particularly things like on-time delivery, front and centre of people's actions, so that we can keep happy customers or make happy customers even happier. And we are seeing good progress in virtually every one of our businesses now that the OTIF focus is very much front and centre of mind.
Well, they don't like going red, Richard, on their KPIs, we've learned.
Yeah.
That was very clear. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard.
Simon, that's the end of questions. Do you have any closing remarks?
So just from me, thanks, everybody, for attending. I think Ultra has had a really good first half, strong strategic and operational progress, and we're really well set up entering H2. And we look forward to seeing or speaking to you as we're out and about, and we anticipate that 2020 should be a year of good progress for us as originally anticipated. Stay safe and have a good summer.
PI World videos and podcasts are for general information and interest. They do not constitute any kind of recommendation or inducement to buy shares of any company. PI World is not offering any kind of financial advice, and nothing in our material should be taken as such.